Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our Patreon sponsors. If you'd be interested in becoming a Patreon sponsor yourself, please go to the website bodybuildinglegendshow.com and you'll see the link in the upper right-hand corner. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. I'm your host, John Hansen. On today's show, we are going to finally have our tribute show to the great Bill Pearl, who passed away on September 14th, 2022. And on the show today, we've got Boyer Coe, who is always one of our favorite guests. Boyer is the 1969 AAU Mr. America winner, and he went on to win the NAPA Mr. Universe several times, as well as the WBBG Mr. World contest many times. And then he was a top IFBB pro bodybuilder in the 1970s and 1980s. And then we also have Richard Baldwin on the show. I interviewed Richard a couple of years ago. I haven't talked to him since. So it was good to have Richard on the show. Richard won his class at the Mr. America contest twice in the middleweight division, took second place at the Mr. Universe, and he's won countless titles. And both Richard and Boyer were lifelong friends of Bill Pearl. I think Richard met Bill in 1971, but Boyer has known Bill ever since the 1960s. When he was competing for the Mr. America contest. So they have remained in touch with Bill since then. And so they both had a lot to offer as far as a tribute to the great Bill Pearl. So we'll be getting to that interview in a second. I have a trip coming up next week. I'm going to LA and this is with Old School Labs. And I believe they're going to be doing some kind of ambassador program with their top ambassadors with Old School Labs. And I think it's going to be myself and Samir Banut and Nick Trigilli. And we are all, of course, part of the Muscle Maturity podcast every week that's on YouTube under Old School Labs' channel. And I believe they got a lot of stuff planned for us. The problem is we've got a hurricane coming to Tampa this week. And it's on its way, and they don't know where it's going to hit. So I am supposed to leave on Wednesday. And I think that's when the hurricane is going to be coming through. It doesn't look like it's going to hit land from right now, from what they're saying. Who knows with these hurricanes? They can change any second. But it looks like we will be getting a lot of wind and a lot of rain. I think it's going to be happening on that day. So I might be delayed, maybe canceled. So that's still up in the air. So I don't know what's been happening with that. What else is going on? I did not get any emails this week. I hope you guys enjoyed our interview last week with Tom Muscolino. And Tom was an old friend of mine from Chicago, and he talked about competing in the 1960s and in the Teenage Mr. America, where he took second place in 1969. So if you haven't heard that interview, go back and check that out. That was pretty interesting. He also talked about training at the Duncan YMCA when Sergio was at his peak, and he got to see Sergio training. So that was really interesting stuff. Oh, I've been working hard on my bodybuilding history book. So I talked to Lee Haney last week and told him I'm hard at work at it. I'm actually almost done with the 1960s. Should be finishing that up this week. So I started the book writing about 1960, and I've gone through every year since then, and it's getting much, much more involved every succeeding year because there's just more and more contests, and the competition has really picked up. When you look at bodybuilding history from 1960 till I just finished 1968, I believe. It's really, really picked up. It's amazing how the sport grew in that short time period. And also it's amazing how the physiques changed so much. If you look at the physiques in the early 1960s, and especially if you go back to the 1950s, they were really, I guess you could call them undeveloped. They just weren't, most of the physiques were not very impressive. And I'm talking about the Mr. America, the NAPA Universe, even the guys that were winning these contests. Most of these guys were not that well developed. So I don't know if it was because steroids came into the picture or just the competition increased and we had more people involved in it. Maybe the training got better. Who knows? But I'm sure steroids had a lot to do with it as far as the development of the physiques, but it really is interesting. And I'm starting to see, you know, in my research now, of course, some of the greats are coming in. Sergio Oliva, who made his appearance at the Mr. America in the early 1960s. And then, of course, you've got Arnold, who came into the scene around 1965 when he won the Junior Mr. Europe. And then, of course, 1966 when he took second to Chet Yorton. And then you got a lot of new bodybuilders coming up. Dennis Tenorino, Boyer Coe, Chris Dickerson, Jim Haislop. So it's really interesting stuff. I can't wait till the book is done. You guys are going to really love it. It's going to really be great. And I'm glad I've been buying all these old magazines because I can go back and I can do a little research by looking at these old magazines and seeing who won what contest. It's really, really interesting if you're into the sport like I am. When we get done with our interview with Boyer and with Richard Baldwin, I'm going to read an article that is going to coincide with our Bill Pearl tribute. It comes from the March 1972 issue of Iron Man magazine. It was written by George Coates. And Boyer actually gave me George's information, so I'm going to try and contact him and get some information, or maybe we can do an interview with George. But George wrote a five-part article for Iron Man magazine in the 1972 issues, and it's called The Bill Pearl Story. Was it 72? Yeah, this was 72, so this must have been right after the 71 universe that Bill won. But I think the article started before the Mr. Universe contest. And it was kind of a build-up, maybe you could even say kind of a promotion for Bill competing in his last show. And it was just basically a retrospective of Bill's life, starting from the very beginning when he started training and all the competitions he entered and opening up his gyms and things like that. It finished now with this article, which I said come from the March 72 issue of Iron Man, and they talk about the 1971 NABBA Universe, which was Bill's last contest. So I think you guys are really going to like it. It's kind of a long article, but it's really interesting and a lot of great stuff in there. So I guess Bill sat down with George Coates and did this really long interview about his life, and then George put it in Iron Man. Also, if you guys are not subscribed to my YouTube channel, you want to check that out this week because I'm going to be putting up some of our older interviews that I've done over the last year, and I'm going to be getting some of those up. I was doing some editing this weekend, so I'll try to get this one up right away with Boyer Coe and Richard Baldwin because it is very timely because Bill just passed not too long ago, and I'm going to try and get some of the other ones up also that I've done. So check that out if you're a fan of YouTube. All right, I don't have any emails this week, so if you guys do want to send me emails about this week's show, you can do that at naturalolympia@gmail.com. Just send those to me, and I'll read them on the air next week. All right, without any further ado, here is our Bill Pearl tribute, the great Bill Pearl, who passed away at the age of 91 on September 14th this year, and we're going to have Boyer Coe and Richard Baldwin on the show right now to talk about Bill Pearl. Here we go. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And I have a very special show this week and I have two very special guests. First, we have Mr. Boyer Coe, Mr. Universe, Mr. World, Mr. America. And we also have Richard Baldwin, who was a two-time Mr. America winner in the middleweight class. We're here today to talk to you about one of the real greats in the sport, a real legend who just passed away recently, Bill Pearl. And both Boyer and Richard knew Bill very well. They moved him for many, many years. So I thought we should have a special show for Bill. I met Bill, of course, a couple times as well. But you guys really knew him very well. Thank you for coming on the show, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, John.
Well, Boyer, why don't we start with you? I know you knew Bill a long time. Did you know Bill when you were starting bodybuilding as a teenager and read about him in the magazines?
Actually, I started following Bill Pearl when I was 12 years old.
Wow.
At the time, the only magazine that was available on a newsstand that had anything to do with bodybuilding was Strength and Health.
Mm-hmm.
And then most of it was strictly Olympic lifting. But they provide a little coverage about bodybuilding, grudgingly, because Bob Hoffman was 100% AAU and weightlifting. He didn't even like bodybuilding.
Yeah. But
what I recall was seeing a small picture of Bill Pearl. This is going back to about 1958 or so, right before. And I saw his physique. I said, my God, this is what I really would like to look like. And he had given an exhibition at, in Philadelphia, John Fritzy's gym. It was a double bicep pulls. Oh man, I said, this is what I like. And then I didn't have an opportunity to meet him until a few years later. Actually, it was in, I think it was in, Winter Haven, Florida.
Okay.
I was competing in a contest and Bill was going to give a posing exhibition. And that was my opportunity to see him in person. So I flew to Tampa and, lo and behold, he was with, Dr. Craig Whitehead. So many of these guys have passed on.
Mm.
So anyway, I got a chance to meet with him, talk to him, and then went down. Frank Zane gave me a ride. We went down to Winter Haven, Florida. And Jim Haslam won the contest, naturally. But that wasn't even my goal. I just wanted to see Bill Pearl in person. So that was my first seeing him pull, and it was incredible.
Mm.
He gave it like the old man type strong man posing routine, like with the, he had the fake mustache and
yeah, like Eugene Smith,
and the fur trunks and all like that.
Yeah.
And then he came out again and he posed. He was fantastic. And then what I realized a little bit later on, he had been friends with Red Laurel, who's been my mentor my whole life. So that he brought me closer to him. So that's how I really became friends. And then after he had his bad last accident, I talked to him and his wife probably almost daily, checking on to see how he was doing.
Wow.
Really? I really wish you would have had time to get Red on here, because Red was probably the last guy to visit Bill before he passed away. He went to see him probably, not more than 2 weeks before he passed away. Really sad.
Mm. Wow. Richard, how about you? When was the first time you met Bill?
Gosh, I met him was 71.
Okay.
It was like, he'd been a hero of mine for a while. And I even took photos of him to the gym to inspire me. But when I found out he was going to guest pose in Houma, Louisiana at a contest, and Boyer was too. And then the guy actually asked me to judge. The promoter asked me to judge. So I said, yeah, okay, I'll come. Yeah, that's another reason to get there. So, but it was like, I've never been the same. You know, he was perfect head to toe. His tan was like nothing I'd ever seen. I guess that Native American heritage helped him there. But, it was perfect. Trunks perfect. Posing perfect. I mean, he would complain. He complained before about his head was too big. But I said, Bill, it fits your body. You'd look like a pinhead if you had a smaller, because you're so huge. I said, you look great. But that was the first time I met him.
Yeah.
And I've posted a picture of shaking his hand. And the look on my face is crazy. It's like, like you met Jesus or something. I got a big smile. my life's going to be great forever or something. I don't know. But, it was, I think it impacted me as much as the first time I met John Grimmick when I was a lot younger.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
But the funny thing is, later we were talking about getting together, and he said he still had that same shirt and he'd wear it when we got together for dinner. Never made it because of COVID and then the accident. But if you want, I'll read a few things he said since then.
Sure.
In that period.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. One thing I'd like to add, with all of the tremendous awards and every accomplishments of Bill, the one thing that stands out the most, he was truly a nice guy.
Mm-hmm.
Forget about the bodybuilding. He was just a very, very nice. He always had time to tell you hello, regarding no matter how busy it was. It was at a trade show, at a contest, and he was unbelievable in remembering people's names.
Yeah.
You could meet him the first time, not see him 7-8 years, he'd still remember your name.
Yeah.
That's like John Grimmick. I met Grimmick when I was a kid in college, and years later when I was on the cover of magazines, he said, hey, you're that kid that he remembered me for that. I'm like, holy mackerel.
Yeah.
He had a hell of a memory too. But you're right, Boyer. He is one of the nicest guys I've met. And Boyer's another one. Boyer's another guy that is such a great representative for the sport. A gentleman. I've never heard anything bad about Boyer. He's a great guy. And Bill was another one. I mean, one of the nicest guys I ever met. And no big ego. Mm-hmm. I mean, that kind of shocks you when somebody's, you know, up there that far and the ego's just not there.
Especially in the bodybuilding world, you know.
Yeah.
It's very unusual, you know. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Boyer, because, you know, when Bill passed away a couple of weeks ago, all I saw on Facebook was, like you said, it wasn't about his contest. It wasn't about his physique, although that was incredible. And he was a real legend in his time. But it was more about just the person he was and what a great guy he was. And he was like that with everybody. And that's just so unusual to have, you know, such a great human being in this sport of ours, you know, where it's all centered around the body and, you know, about it's kind of a narcissistic sport. But Bill was such a genuine person. He was such a good person. I mean, I think we all of us that met him, we all try to strive to be like him. Right. You know, I mean, he was such a great example for all of us.
Well, it's true. And like I said, he was such a humble guy.
Yeah.
That's really what made it stand out. Such all accomplishments he had, but he still maintained a very humble attitude towards everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the first time I met him, I was like 25 years old. It was at that club industry show they used to have in Chicago, and he was with Life Fitness. And I was just walking. I used to go to that expo every year because they used to have bodybuilders there at some of the booths. And I was walking around. I saw him at the Life Fitness, and I was like, wow, I wonder if I should go over there and talk to Bill Pearl. There's Bill Pearl. So I gradually went up to the booth, you know, kind of slowly, and he seen me coming, and he comes up to me, and he made a compliment about my physique, and he shook my hand. I was just blown away.
You can't beat that, huh, John?
No, I mean, unbelievable. It was just incredible. Just such a great guy. So you mentioned, Richard, that guest posing. Now, that was the year that Bill won the 1971 Mr. Universe. That was his last Mr. Universe. Yeah. And I got all these old issues of Iron Man I've been collecting recently. And I read about that. They had the story about Bill. And they mentioned that, Boyer, that you and him guest posed at a contest. I guess Leo Stern was kind of setting this up. And he had him guest pose like 6 months before the universe. And I guess Bill's a little bit smooth because it was still 6 months away. And he wanted to see what the reaction of the crowd would be like. Oh, Pearl's too smooth. He's not going to do it. And then I think when the contest got closer, they set up another guest posing with you and Bill. And was that in Louisiana, you said?
Yeah, it was in Houma, Louisiana. Richard is right. Yeah. I think the guy that promoted that was a guy by the name of Arlie Vest.
Yeah, great guy.
He got so excited. He was a huge fan of Bill Pearl's. So I never will forget this. After the contest was over with, he had a big party at his house. So in the mix of all that stuff, neither he nor his wife forgets about the kids. They left them at the contest. Oh, everybody's back at his house. And all of a sudden, well, where's my son? Didn't you pick him up? No. They were still sitting outside. We went back to where I can't remember where it was at, a high school, maybe. The kids were just sitting outside on the steps. They forgot their kids. They were so excited about Bill being there.
And I thought I was excited about Pearl being there.
Hey, Richard, I'm glad you mentioned also his posing. If you guys could, like, talk a little bit about his posing. I mean, Bill wasn't like an Ed Corny type of poser, right? But it was just when he got up there, I heard this from so many people who've seen him pose, that he just really commanded the stage with his presence.
Yes. I definitely think that. And it was like you couldn't find a flaw on him, I don't think, because he could hide any flaws he had, I think, pretty good.
Yeah.
And it was like Zane hides his flaws, you know. But he was so huge and just, I don't know, the way he moved, it was like watching some art or something, or I don't know how to describe it. What would you say, Boyer?
Well, I think a lot of it had to do with Leo Stern. Mm-hmm. Leo Stern spent a lot of time with Bill. Yeah. And Leo was a pretty accomplished photographer. And they took thousands of photos and would study just how the right angle for this pose or that pose.
Mm-hmm.
And And Leo's old gym, which is still in San Diego, still in existence.
No kidding.
He had a skylight. Wow. And I was fortunate enough to be photographed there once by Cliff Swan. This is right after I won the Mr. America. That was some of the best photographs I ever took. But wow, it was just perfect lighting. And I think Leo really, really spent a lot of time perfecting Bill's posing routine. I think that's what helped him out a whole lot.
Yeah.
But he was an accomplished poser because each pose to me represented power, powerful physique. And that's what he projected.
Okay.
And perfect symmetry. And the way he moved from one pose to another. I mean, a lot of guys have a pose that most of their body looks pretty good, except one leg might be twisted a certain way that kind of throws off the symmetry. But Pearl Stern worked with him so hard. Couldn't find a flaw in any of his poses, don't you think, Boyer?
Oh, I agree. He was flawless because they worked for perfection, you know, which you mentioned something earlier today. I don't even follow bodybuilding anymore because I think it's just lost its way. It has no appeal to me whatsoever. You mentioned the board shorts. And when I first saw, I said, this can't really be happening. I think what's happened, it's just turned into a money-making machine for the promoters. If they could add another six categories, they'd go ahead and do that too. All they're worried about is collecting the entry fees. And everybody wants to get up on stage and get awarded something. And I think that's what's happened. And as far as opposing other bodybuilders, and I guess I should because I'm old, I'm out of shape. I'm not, you know, I'm far removed. But the posing, all they do is look like they waddle on stage and hit a couple of poses, and that's it. There's no grace to it anymore at all.
Mm-hmm. The fact that they have to go like this to get applause, I hate that.
Yeah.
Well, me too. I never could understand. If you got to do like that, if you're good, the audience will let you know it. You don't need to do that.
Yeah, I want you guys to expand on that a little bit because, you know, I hear people like in our generation or, you know, before my generation, we criticize the way bodybuilding is today. But I mean, bodybuilders always did try to get bigger, right? I mean, Bill was a big guy, but it wasn't always about just size. I mean, when you guys were younger and you were trying, well, I know, Richard, you had more of a type of Frank Zane type of physique. But when you guys were younger and you were pursuing bodybuilding and you were working your way up, I'm sure you wanted to get bigger, too. But the emphasis was more than just size, right? It was a beauty. You know?
And it wasn't ignoring the waist.
Yes.
You had to have a small waist. Mm-hmm. Even Arnold, you look at Arnold's waist and you're like, nobody his size has a waist like that anymore.
Right.
You know? The Boyer's generation, I mean, they were starting to get huge, but Boyer and I had a big waist. And those guys just, that was a key to being a bodybuilder was huge with a small waist.
Well, you always had... You strived for to me, a nice V taper.
Yeah.
Okay. And I think it goes back. I don't remember how old I was very young, but the first time Steve Reeves made the movie Hercules. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. His physique. Oh, I couldn't get over this. Man, that's the ideal body. And I guarantee you today, if you had the ability to bring back Steve Reeves, compared to the current Mr. Olympia, people would still pick Steve Reeves because he had a universal appeal.
Yeah.
I don't think bodybuilding really started to go overboard. I think it happened with Dorian.
Yeah.
Dorian was the first really big guy. And then after that, there was just a progression.
Isn't that really when the insulin and growth hormones started coming into the sport?
Exactly. I think
that's the problem.
Yeah. So when you guys were young, even though you wanted to get bigger and you were, you know, you were younger bodybuilders and wanted to build up your body, you still always had in mind the ideal physique. It wasn't just about putting on mass.
No, in my generation, the one to me that always stood out was Sergio Oliva.
Yeah.
Because he had the huge shoulders and I'm going back to 1966 when he won the junior Mr. America. And I know this for a fact because I was there. Okay. He only weighed about 197, 198 pounds. but his waist was only 27 inches. Each of his thighs were 28 inches. Each thigh was bigger than his waist. And what confused me was I happened to go across at a Howard Johnson's, and I was really nervous. This is my first national contest. And he's sitting there eating a plate of fried chicken and mashed potatoes about 30 minutes before the prejudging night. I remember telling Rita, I said, what the hell am I doing wrong? I've been dieting. Look at the food this guy is eating.
He was a true genetic freak.
Yeah. Oh, he was. Well, he was the first true genetic freak. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
And then the greatest physique photo, in my opinion, that was ever taken was at the 1972.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Olympia. He should have won that contest without a doubt.
Yeah.
That was the pinnacle of his physique.
Yeah.
And I think even he realized, you know, that's the way it is. Arnold's always going to be first.
Yeah.
And that was a shame. Because he looked unbelievable.
Yeah.
Boyer, when you first saw Leiba win the 66 Olympia, and then 67, 68. Did you think anybody would ever beat him?
No.
I didn't either. I go, who could beat this guy?
Yeah.
And he was so far ahead of everybody else. And the thing about Oliva, which really held him back, sadly, he had no education. You know, had he had been educated or had somebody, a good manager looking after him, he could have done a whole lot better than he did with Weider. I think he realized later on that everybody was taking advantage of him.
Yeah.
I don't think he could really, I don't know if this really is true or not, but I've heard this before. He couldn't really read English. Like he would go into a restaurant and people would tell me, okay, everybody else is ordering a steak. He might come out with macaroni and cheese. He said, well, why would he eat that? Because he just figured, point to something, whatever they brought him, that's what he would eat. Oh, I don't know if that's true or not, but it sounds possible.
Yeah. Yeah, I was reading about some of those earlier Mr. America contests. I mean, Harold Poole took second a couple times, and they said the reason was because he had a stuttering problem. And when they did that interview part of it, they said, you know, I think what they were saying was, we can't have a guy who's Mr. America go around representing our contest if he can't talk, you know. And I think with Sergio, it was because the accent, and like you said, he couldn't speak English that well. And they were always passing him by for someone else to win the contest.
I think it was like the Miss America, this all-American, that kind of thing.
That's kind of how they set
it up. So you had to have an interview and prove you could talk and have some athletic points, right, Boyer?
Exactly. Oh, yeah. You had the only time I ever competed in a weightlifting contest, you had to have a certain amount of athletic points.
Mm-hmm.
So if you competed and you scored a certain amount in your weight class, you got the points. So I competed in one contest to do that just to get it out of the way. But you mentioned Harold Poole. Harold Poole was incredible. He first entered, if I remember correctly, the first entered the Mr. America contest when he was 16.
16, yeah.
And he still placed within, I would say, the top 10 anyway.
Yeah.
I never really got to know him because I competed a few times, but he was past his prime. And he was very, very quiet. He never really engaged in much conversation with anybody. He competed in a couple of Dan Lurie contests, as I recall.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, he was fourth when he was 17, and then he took second when he was 18 and 19. I mean, it's amazing. He was so good at such a young age.
You know, another thing that I liked about Bill Pearl, I didn't mean to interrupt you, John.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Richard. One of the things I really liked about Bill Pearl was he wasn't entering bodybuilding contests just to win a trophy and then drop, you know, quit training. He was a bodybuilder for life.
Yeah.
And I remember we had one conversation. And he was so disappointed in Grimmick, who was one of his major heroes, because he quit training before he died, right? And Bill told me, I'm going to keep training until I drop, you know? he said, I'm not going to be like that and quit.
Yeah.
And I mean, even one of the last conversations I had with him, he was telling me how he was fighting Parkinson's, and he told me what his training routine was. Do you want to hear it?
Oh, yeah.
He said, Richard, I'm fighting Parkinson's by training 3 days a week, doing 45 sets, 12 to 20 reps, whole body in an hour and a half. I'm walking
45 sets.
Huh?
45 sets.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he said, I try to keep a positive attitude and think good thoughts and say prayers every night. I could not make it without my wife. She takes over where I leave off. So he was bound determined. He was going to get in the gym no matter what.
That's amazing. Yeah. I thought he had to stop training when he got Parkinson's, but I'm glad he was able to
do that. No, he continued to train, of course, until he had his accident. I spoke to Judy. Actually, Judy called me the day after Bill had passed away. And she he's right. He couldn't have done all that without her. She was his rock. He really depended on her. She deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah. Why do you think Bill only competed in the Mr. Universe every couple of years? He wasn't one of those guys, you know, like a lot of the guys are, where they go year after year after year. He would take like 6 years off or 5 years off.
Well, I don't think he had anything to prove.
Okay.
You know, he was confident in what he did. And then there's a whole backstory to the 1971 NABBA Universe. He had no interest in competing in that. The backstory on that involved Arthur Jones. For some reason, Arthur believed that Bill and Red and I conspired against Arthur, that when he came out with Nautilus, we were going to start our own equipment company, which we had it never entered my mind, okay? What happened? He was so paranoid. He invited Red and I down to Lake Helen, Florida. And the little motel room we were staying in, he had Kim Wood spend all night while we were out with Arthur drilling a hole in the wall and hiding a microphone so he could listen to what we were saying. And I noticed for a fact, because years later, Arthur told me that. And I said, well, what did you find? He said, I didn't come up with anything. I said, Arthur, why do you think we would do that? But anyway, somehow or other, we got the very first plate-loaded Nautilus bicep and tricep machines. He sent one to Bill, and he sent one to us in Louisiana.
Okay.
Well, it was dangerous. Some guy let the thing go, and it mashed a guy's foot. So Bill says, I can't have that in my gym. So he got Bob Clark, who was a very good equipment builder down in San Diego, to put a selectorized weight stack on it. And Arthur blew up when he found out about it because you changed Arthur's machine.
Mm.
So then he got the idea, okay, I'm gonna destroy Bill, but he's gonna enter the NABBA Universe. He didn't even want to go to the universe, but he started sending letters to Bill and to Leo Stern. Okay. Well, that pissed Leo off. Okay?
Right.
So that got Bill motivated, because then he went out and hired Sergio, which they can say, oh, Sergio did that. I don't think Sergio looked worth a damn when he went to the contest. He was big, but that was it.
Smooth.
He wasn't a finished physique.
Yeah.
And that's why Bill won so easily, because he was a polished physique.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the next year, when Sergio went back to training his regular way, that's when he blossomed. That was, like I said, that was the best shape he was ever in, was when he went to Munich, Germany.
Hmm. Yeah, so Sergio was training under Arthur Jones, right, for that year in 1970.
He did train. Yeah. He trained down there in Lake Helen. I want to say, I don't think it was more than about 2 or 3 months, if that long.
Oh, really? Okay.
But, I mean, Arthur was paying him for it, you know.
Yeah.
And then I think if he would have won, then Arthur would have given him another 10 grand or something like that. That was a lot of money back in those days.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I always heard about the article in Iron Man. Was that true that Bill kind of challenged everybody to go to the – he said he's going to go, and his last contest was going to be the 71 Universe, and if anybody wanted to come up against him, that was
– I read that. I read that, too. I don't know if Bill actually wrote that.
Okay.
And
I wouldn't doubt that Leo did, would you?
Yeah. Well, it all started out with Arnold, which he didn't write the article. Rick Wayne wrote the article.
Okay.
All the bodybuilders are paper tigers because they're afraid to compete. Okay.
Yeah.
So Arnold Everett would go every year to the NABBA Universe. Okay. Mm-hmm. You could, it was, and back in those days, it was open. Okay. You could go whatever organization you wanted to. Okay. As soon as Bill Pearl committed to going, Joe Weider got afraid. So Joe and Ben changed the rules. Arnold couldn't go in the NABBA Universe anymore.
Mm.
That's it. Now, I don't know how it would have turned out if Arnold would have been there. Who mm-hmm. knows?
Yeah.
If Arnold was basically at his prime in those
yeah.
days, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, that's history now. But bodybuilding has always been, that's what's bad about it, a matter of opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's no, I mean, if you run a race, they got somebody who can time you, you cross the finish line first. If it's a split second more, but there's no way bodybuilding. I've always said, I don't know how you really judge a contest accurately, because regardless of the judges, they all got their bias. I mean, usually the guy they pick to win is somebody that they would really like to look like.
Yeah.
It's just a psychological thing.
Right, right, right. Yeah. Bill always chose the NABBA Universe and not Weider shows to do, right? Because he felt they were more fair.
Yeah.
Well, from my own experience, I do think, look, there was never any money involved. They didn't, the hotel was substandard. Mm-hmm. I mean, the first time I went over to the hotel, they only had one bathroom on the whole floor. You know, if you had to go to the bathroom, they'd go all the way down the hall, you know. But the main thing about the NABBA Universe was a prestige of the contest, and Oscar Heidenstein really made you feel welcome. He did everything to respect all the bodybuilders. And I think that's what people really admired about the NABBA Universe. It was a long history. All the greats won it. Grimmick yeah. won it. Steve Reeves won it. Bill Pearl won it. Red Spark won it.
Yeah.
So it was an honor just to be in that group.
Yeah. Yeah. Did they charge entry fees back then, Boyer, for the competitors?
No.
No.
No. I don't ever remember paying an entry fee to anything. AAU or
oh really? No kidding.
IFBB or what was Dan Lewis contest? Coabba. I don't. WBB. There was no entry fees in those days.
No? Wow, no kidding. Wow. So how did Oscar Heidenstein make money then? Was it just from the audience?
From the audience.
That's, yeah.
Yeah. And he had that Health and Strength magazine.
Okay.
And they published that, which is I think they still publish that magazine.
Do they really?
It's yeah. very old. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like one of the first ones, I think. Right.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, one of the articles I read, Oscar was saying, he said, we don't make any money at this. He said he was losing money, you know, at that NABBA unit. And they had always had like 14 or 16 judges. It was a lot of judges. And from all
over the world. I don't remember how many, but I know it was a lot of judges.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about, now maybe it changed over the years, but the first couple of years I went over there, it was judged under natural lighting. It wasn't even on a stage. It was just, you had like a short rise above the floor, and the audience, the judges were there, and the audience was, but the audience was probably less than 10 feet away. You actually kind of had to go through the audience to get up on stage.
Hmm. Wow.
And it was just under natural lighting, you know, but I remember the first time I was fortunate enough to win. I mean, that was the one contest, I said, wow, I really did something, you know?
Yeah.
And it was also the first time I beat Jim Haslam, too.
Yeah. And Boyer, you were one of the few to win the America and the Universe in the same year. Not many, I think there's only been like five or six guys that have done that in the whole history.
Well, see, I think what happened, and I'm talking too much. We need to get Richard in this thing, too.
No, I'm fine.
the thing is this, okay? Dennis was in incredible shape, but he went over there, and I would have picked Dennis winning in 67 over Arnold. Mm-hmm. But at that time, Arnold had no calves. He wasn't complete, but he was a little bit bigger, and then he was big in Europe. Now, the next year, Dennis came back and beat Jim Haslam.
Yeah.
And I thought it would have Jim. So then Jim comes back the next year in 69. And I'm thinking, oh man, we're gonna go at it again. So the only thing I ever told you, and I love Jim, he was a great guy. I said, Jim, today, and this is back in a little dressing room, I said, today I'm gonna beat you. And I really didn't know, but I was hoping. and I think that psyched him out, you know. But it was a close contest because Jim had that beautiful physique. You know, had that all-American, I guess you'd say Southern California or Florida physique. Yeah. He was very popular.
Yeah.
He had a nice broad shoulders and a nice waist. He kind of even reminded me of Steve Reeves.
He did, yeah. He was the closest thing to Steve Reeves.
Yeah.
Yeah, even Bill said regarding the judging with the NABBA Universe, he said even Arnold used to really enjoy those victories because he said he knew it was fair, you know, because you had all these from all around. It wasn't like a weeder contest where it might have been set up, you know. It was a really honest victory. So even Arnold was happy with those NABBA Universe victories.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't even know. I haven't been to IFBB contests in many years. I have no idea how it's judged. But, I mean, for years, and I'll give Wayne D'Amelio credit. He was the one that truly developed the professional divisions.
Mm-hmm.
And before him, there was really not much of. He's the one that started the Grand Prix shows.
Yeah.
And I was never clear to me why they booted him out. I never understood that. No one's ever told me exactly what happened. But now I think it's just basically a money making deal. I don't even know who judges the Mr. Olympia anymore.
Yeah.
Or for years when Ben Weider was alive, they made a big deal of IFBB Mr. Universe, and they'd always have the IFBB Congress, and you always got a big report of that in the magazines.
Yeah.
Of course, the magazines no longer exist. I don't even think they have that anymore.
No, they don't. I don't think so. No. Hey, Richard, were you in that 78 America, the one that was in Cincinnati?
Yes. Yeah.
And Bill Guest posed at that, right? Because that was his 25th anniversary.
Yeah, when I saw him pose, I said, you should have entered the contest. You would have won it.
Right. Yeah, the reason I mentioned it, I saw Roger Schwab on Facebook, and he wrote a really nice tribute to Bill. And he said he was at that show. He was at that 78 America. And he was blown away by Bill when he guest posed.
Yeah.
Bill could have won that contest at, I think he was 48 years old at that time.
Yeah, absolutely. I was shocked. He looked so good. I go, man, he's not even training for a contest. And he shows up looking like this, making us all look bad.
Yeah, yeah. Did you guys
I've ever never seen Boyer come guest pose it out of shape either.
Yeah. Did you guys ever see Bill do his strongman act where he would like tear the license plate in half and bend the nails and stuff?
I haven't.
I think he did some of that at the show down in Winter Haven, Florida. This was back in 1968. Okay. I vaguely remember that, but I think he tore a deck of cards and he tore a license plate. That's all I remember. I don't remember what else he did as far as a strongman. Seems like I recall that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy back then. Like Chuck Sipes used to do that too. And a couple of those bodybuilders would do that. Like, and even Franco would come out and like deadlift on the night he was competing, you know, he'd be deadlifting like 700 pounds. That was crazy. I can't imagine any of these bodybuilders today doing anything stressful, you know, before a competition, you know?
Well, I mean, you only got to look back at poor Ronnie Coleman.
Yeah.
God. I mean, here's a guy, 8-time Mr. Olympia, and arguably the guy who had the most muscle of anybody at the time.
Anybody, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many. I haven't kept up with him in a long time. I don't think I think he's just in a wheelchair now.
Yeah.
That's a shame.
It is.
Yeah, I saw him at the Arnold.
11 back surgeries?
I think he had like 14. God. Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I saw him at the Arnold. He was wheeled into it in there, and then this girl helped him with crutches to get to his seat so he could sign autographs.
Yeah, yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah. Yeah, he pushed it hard for a long time. I mean, he was so strong, you know, and he was using weights that no one else was, you know.
Oh, I know.
Well, I was reading some of these articles about Bill, and I read one where he was doing a strongman act. That's why I was asking you guys if you ever saw it. And he had one where he had like a spike, like a railroad spike, and he was bending it. And I think he was on tour or something because he was gone for like over a week and he was getting tired because he was in hotel rooms and stuff, you know. And so one of the last ones he did, he tried to bend the spike and it wouldn't bend. So he kept trying harder and harder. And the spike ended up going through his right hand. And he showed it to the audience and the place went crazy, gave like a standing ovation. And then I guess he had to walk through the audience to go to the dressing room and the place was going nuts. And he's like, I should do this every time. Yeah, it's unbelievable. Why do you think Bill's physique was so revered? I mean, was it the size or was it just like you said, Richard, that symmetry and the proportion too?
I think it was both as a combination of everything.
Yeah.
And that presentation on top of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I agree with that completely, but a lot had to do with his presence. People really genuinely liked Bill Pearl.
Yeah.
That's what made him stand out. You know, so many of these bodybuilders got such big egos, you know, that takes away from their physique. Bill was humble. He was never like that.
Yeah.
That's, to me, what made him great.
Yeah. And Boyer, you said he had an older brother, right, who was bigger than him.
Oh, Harold. Actually, right after Bill passed away, I got to thinking about Harold. And I tried to track him down, and I did find out. Red told me, well, the last time he visited Bill, he had asked about Harold. And Harold had just passed away, too. He was also 91. He was 2 years older than Bill. But okay. The thing about Harold, Harold had the genetics that Bill had. Had he been serious about bodybuilding, he would have been just as good or even better than Bill. Talk about a guy who had a huge frame. And I saw this myself, okay? He could take his ring finger and pass a quarter through it. That's how thick his fingers were, okay? And he, where Bill was an extremely nice, humble guy, Harold was mean.
Mm.
You know, I was in Bill Pearl's gym in Los Angeles, the one on Manchester Boulevard. And a guy came in there. I came from the airport, went to Bill's gym. I was waiting for Bill to get back. So I'm sitting there talking to Harold, first time I met Harold. So a guy comes in raising hell because he had bought some desiccated liver tablets and had given him diarrhea. And he was raising hell. He wanted his money back. Real cursing loud and a pretty big guy. So we're sitting there. And I said, well, how many did you take? He said, I was supposed to take 40 a day. I said, well, how many did you take at one time? I took all 40 at one time. I said, well, there's a problem. Man. And about that time, Harold had had enough. So he reaches down. He just pulls out like a baseball bat. He don't say nothing to the guy. He's going to wail on him. And the guy starts running. And Harold chases him out of the gym over about, oh, I don't know, maybe 25 yards. The guy kept running. I mean, that's how quick a temper he had. Well, Bill always told me that's why he started bodybuilding, because Harold, when they were kids, Harold would beat him up all the time.
That's what I heard, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting, too, how Bill got much bigger. I mean, I always thought that he had those genetics where he was born like that. But when you see pictures of him when he started, he was actually pretty skinny. But he must have had the kind of genetics where he responded. And he also always did like really heavy weight training, right? He did like the basic compound movements and he was pretty strong, right, Bill, at his peak.
Well, he was, yeah.
Yeah.
I never had an opportunity to watch him work out. I regret I didn't do that, but I never had an opportunity to watch him train.
Mm-hmm. Did he do something like over a 300-pound behind the neck press or something?
That's what I read, yeah.
Yeah.
Could have been, yeah. I wouldn't doubt it. He was strong.
Yeah. And for back then, I mean, that was really strong for back in the 50s and 60s, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he trained a lot of people. Like, I mean, you know, we know he trained Chris Dickerson, but I think he was helping out. Didn't he help out Dennis Tenorino?
That was way before Chris. I mean,
yeah.
Dennis would come out from New York
right
to California every summer and train with Bill. And then he trained Jim Morris.
Yep.
And several other people. Yeah,
Dave Johns.
Trained a lot of guys.
Clint Barile. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when I interviewed Chris years ago, before he passed away, he said that it was just kind of fortunate that once he started bodybuilding, once he decided to start weight training, Bill just opened up that gym in Los Angeles, and it was only like a couple blocks away from his house. So it was just like it was the closest gym to him, and little did he know that he was going to have Bill Pearl as his trainer, you know? Yeah.
It was a good gym. I never had an opportunity to train there, but I went there several times. But I think it was on Manchester Boulevard in Englewood. Yeah. It was very near the airport.
Yeah. So did Bill help you out, Boyer, when you were competing, like when you were going for the Mr. America Universe? I mean, did he help you?
I would talk to him a lot.
Okay.
You know, I mean, we didn't really – he would ask me how I was doing and stuff like that. And Red was the one that – Red was a stickler just like Bill with posing. I spent more time backstage or in the gym. He had an old room back here, and I'd spend hours posing. He'd get on me. The funny thing about him, he said, don't bother doing a chest pose. You just can't do it. Forget about it. You know, but it was a compulsory pose. You had to do it. And in 68, I ended up winning best chest. Right. I told Red, I said, see, I know what I'm doing after all.
Yeah. How about you, Richard? Did you ever get a chance to, how well did you know Bill throughout the years? I mean, you met him back in the...
Not well. I told you I met him in 71. And then at the 80th Mr. Universe, he came up to me and said, how do you think you're going to do? I said, I think the guy I beat last year is going to beat me this year. I think I'm going to come in second. He said, he didn't say holy moly. What did he say? Something to the effect that, you know, you're the first bodybuilder I ever talked to that had a realistic picture of himself. Everybody said, oh, I'm going to win, you know.
Right,
I said,
right.
Well, you know, I try to be objective, you know.
Yeah.
And then years later, I was writing for bodybuilding.com, mm-hmm. and I was going to do an article on Bill. And so he gave me his phone number, and I was going to do it. And then I got really busy at work and everything, and stuff just went crazy, and then I just never did it. And so then we got in touch again years later and just infrequently, you know, how you doing, what's up, all that kind of stuff. I was really freaking out about how the post I was getting from him or the messages, like after the accident.
Yeah.
And the last one I got, I was asking him, well, how's it going, you know, with that brace, that clamshell and all that stuff, you know, because he had a broken back plus the neck, right? And then he caught a bacterial infection and stuff. But the last thing I got from Rich, every day a little better. Many thanks, Bill. That short little thing. But, you know, so that gave me hope. Maybe we'll be able to go see. Because I was going to go see him before the accident happened. Mm-hmm. So then that got canceled again. And then, boom, he's gone. And now I'm going, oh, my God. First Grimmick and then Scott and all these other guys. And now Pearl.
Yeah.
My world's disappearing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because as long as I've known Bill, you just don't see this guy. You think he's going to be around forever.
Yeah.
You know, I remember right after I heard, I called Red. Red says, oh, my God. Yeah. He says, you know, he says, it's like God died. You know?
Yeah.
He says, we all thought he was going to. And Red's not a youngster either. He's 86.
Yeah.
But I'm so glad that Red had an opportunity to go visit him before he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And but he said Bill's mind was still as sharp as ever.
Really?
And I think in talking to Judy about 5 days before, I think he just told her he didn't want to be a burden on her anymore. He'd had enough. So even he chose the time he was checking out.
Yeah.
Because, like Richard said, he got that infection and he couldn't get rid of it. And I think, according to Judy, that's what finally did him in.
Oh, really?
But about 5 days before he died, he just quit eating. And then he went into hospice and that was it.
Mm.
Guys, I hate to cut this short, but I got a meeting I got to get to.
Okay.
I hate to leave you guys, but I really enjoyed and enjoyed visiting with Richard. I hadn't had a chance to talk to him in many years.
Yeah, I could wrap it up there. If you guys got any final thoughts on Bill, I appreciate you guys, because I know both of you have known him for so long, especially you, Boyer, and you were in touch with him on the phone for so many decades. That's why I really wanted to have both you guys on to, you know, to give a final tribute to Bill.
Or it'll never be the same, right, Boyer?
No, I agree. In other words, he's left a huge imprint on my life. I mean, I admired Bill Pearl so much, even when I was a kid. And I'm sure Richard's aware of this because he's very okay. He had a dove tattooed on his shoulder.
Yeah, I remember.
At 13, I said, "Man, I want to get a tattoo like that." So I go down to this little tattoo shop. I'd say I think it was like $17 or $18 to get that. I picked it out. So here I am riding my bike down there to get that tattoo. Man, got my money. I'm walking in the shop, and a guy says, "Hey, where are you going?" It was my dad.
Oh,
my brother, my friend had told me, and he went down there. I was caught. I said, "Well, I think I'm gonna get a tattoo." He said, "Come here, son." He said, "I'll give you a tattoo," and whipped my butt. And that was the end of my desire to ever have a tattoo.
Oh man, that's a great story. Yeah, he was really a special person. I only got to meet Bill a few times, but he was just an amazing man, and I think we're all going to miss him. You know, he was one of the greats in the whole sport for sure.
Well, guys, I'm going to sign off now.
Okay,
really enjoyed. Thank you for having me on, John.
Thanks, Richard, Boyer. Wonderful. Thanks again.
Seeing you again.
Yes, you too, Boyer. It's been too long.
Yeah. Okay. God bless you guys.
Thanks, Boyer. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, thanks for having me. I mean,
thanks
it was
for
great
here.
to you know, talk with you again, but also Boyer, because I hadn't seen him or talked to him in a long time. So
yeah,
that was great. Absolutely. Really appreciate it. Thank you. And thanks for all you're doing for the sport.
Thanks, Richard. I appreciate it, buddy.
I mean, this is important stuff that you've done to preserve the memories of all this, of our sport.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
All right.
Okay. All right, Richard.
Have a good
one. Talk to you soon, buddy.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. My sincere thanks to Boyer Coe and Richard Baldwin for making time to come on the show and talk about the great Bill Pearl. I know Bill meant a lot to both of those guys, so I appreciate their time coming on the show. I also want to thank our Patreon sponsors for continuing to support the show. As I mentioned in the beginning of the show, if you guys are interested in becoming a Patreon sponsor, just go to our official website, which is thebodybuildinglegendshow.com, and click on the upper right-hand corner for the Patreon link, and you too can become a Patreon donor. All right, before I let you guys go, I'd like to read this article called The Bill Pearl Story. It was written by George Coates, and this was an interview that George did with Bill leading up to the 1971 NAVA Mr. Universe, and this is the last part. This was part 5, the conclusion, and it was published in the March 1972 issue of Iron Man magazine. It says, following his Mr. Universe win, and this was the win, I believe, in 1967. Following his Mr. Universe win, Bill and Leo had a heavy week's schedule of shows in Great Britain. Some of these included shows for Buster McShane in Belfast, Northern Ireland, and London for Wag Bennett, and Plymouth for Bill Jackson, in Manchester for Hal Wrigley, and in Wales for Dennis Staller. One of the highlights of Bill's visit to Britain in 1967 was an invitation from the very famous Mr. J. Paul Getty, who expressed a wish to meet him through Mr. W. Pullum Jr., son of the late W. A. Pullum. Mr. Pullum Sr. was one of the most accomplished weightlifters and strongmen of all time. Mr. Getty invited Bill and his friends to visit him at his wonderful historic two-door mansion in Surrey. While most people usually think of oil wells and millions of dollars in conjunction with Mr. Getty's name, few know that he has always been a physical fitness devotee and is a frequent visitor to the London NAVA Mr. Universe shows. Bill, Leo Stern, Oscar Heidenstam, Dr. Craig Whitehead, and Mr. Bill Pullum spent a memorable day being entertained by Mr. Getty. Bill and Leo also took a short trip to the continent, and one of the stops was Paris, where Leo told me of the following incident. As in all big cities, the hustle and bustle gets to people. Consequently, common courtesies become less common as cities become more and more crowded. It seems Bill and Leo were continuously being hustled and bustled off the sidewalks by impatient pedestrians. Bill figured, to heck with this, I just like to take one walk in this beautiful city without being pushed into the street. Leo laughingly recalls Bill striding manfully down a crowded sidewalk, determined just this once not to get pushed aside. Frenchmen kept bumping into Bill, and kept bouncing off him like billiard balls as the big fellow just kept on moving forward. Whenever Leo recalls this incident, he tells it and laughs until the tears roll down his cheeks. While the rest of the bodybuilding world raves about it, Bill Pearl is and always has been highly critical of his physique. I asked Bill this question. What does it feel like to see your picture in magazines and be called the world's best built man? What kind of reaction do you have? This was his typically modest reply. Well, George, the funny thing of it is I've heard that said, and I've always seen it printed, and I always thought it was a way to sell magazines. I mean, people want to hear this, and they want an idol to look up to, although these idols change just like the seasons. I had my idols, and I'm sure you had yours. I can honestly say that I've never been satisfied with any photograph of myself that was ever printed in a magazine. Honest, I can pick them apart like nobody's business. Leo Stern has taken thousands upon thousands of pictures, and he edits and screens them so carefully that very few in comparison get published. And I've never been satisfied with one yet. Maybe that's good and maybe it's bad, but that's just the way I look at it. One thing about it, though, if people are going to say these kind things about me, I've got to try my hardest to live up to these standards. I wouldn't be any kind of a person at all if I didn't try and feel I owe the public due respect. If a person visits Los Angeles and comes to see me, I feel like I should be in as good a shape as possible. I don't think I'll ever be satisfied with my physique, as I always start thinking I should have trained harder. I think if I have to do it over again, I would have done it differently and worked at it even harder than I have done. I will be the first to admit that I've been extremely fortunate to have done as well as I have. I've averaged 5 or 6 3-hour workouts a week for the last 15 years, and there's still certain parts of me, in my opinion, that lag behind. And I'll continue to work harder and harder to keep these things coming along. Over the years, Bill had long thought of opening a health club that would have universal appeal. His main idea was to separate the businessmen and light trainers from the bodybuilders and heavy powerlifters. This would mean that everyone, regardless of their present physical condition or goals, could use the facilities that most appealed to them. With this in mind, he sold his gym on Manchester Boulevard and began looking for property that would be suitable. He searched for months in various parts of the greater Los Angeles area without any luck. It seemed every time he found some vacant property, something or other just wasn't quite right. Then at long last, he located a building in Pasadena that was large enough for what he had in mind. It took many months of hard work to decorate it and install all the things he wanted to, and it wasn't until March of 1969 that Bill was satisfied that everything was just the way he wanted. Bill had an official opening party, which Leo and I attended. I had never seen anything to compare to the Bill Pearl Pasadena Health Club. To say I was most impressed would be a gross understatement, and while I visited the club many times since, I never failed to be as impressed as I was on that initial visit. When Wayne Galash, the leading writer from Australia, visited the club, he flipped, which is a visitor's typical reaction. The entrance and main exercise room have a decor that defies description, and his heavy training and lifting rooms are the answer to a weight man's prayers. The whole place is kept spotlessly clean, and the atmosphere is such that a person instantly feels at ease. Bill thought of everyone when he set up shop. He has a room which contains passive equipment only. His locker room is spacious, and the makeup room mirror for the ladies looks like it's right out of a movie star's dressing room. The club has a number of sauna rooms, showers, and toilets, and the most fantastic jacuzzi whirlpool bath that one could possibly imagine. Bill even installed a kitchen and dining room where his members can relax and have tea or fruit juices. He's always pleased to receive visitors, and the address is 1210 East Green Street, Pasadena, California. His contest days over, or so he thought, Bill wanted only to stay in fair shape and devote all his time to the business of helping others. Then came the bombshell. It was rumored that Bill was afraid to compete in contests in which other star physiques were entered. He didn't take these attacks seriously at first, as he didn't think that anyone would expect him at over 40 years of age to do battle with these young fellows in their 20s. He had his share of the limelight, and anyway, it just didn't seem fair, as he hadn't worked out for a contest in almost 4 years. However, he hadn't reckoned with the attitude his friend and advisor Leo Stern was to take. Leo talked to Bill and told him that this would be the ideal way to settle the argument once and for all. Bill was very skeptical, but Leo kept insisting that not only could he compete with these people, but he could get into the best shape ever and beat them all. So it was the team of Pearl and Stern embarked on what would be the most vital contest in which Bill has ever competed. A lot of these other fellows had something going for them that Bill didn't and wouldn't have. Drugs. He absolutely refuses to take anabolics or steroids in his training methods towards a better physique. He firmly believes that while these drugs have an important place in the world of medicine, they are in no way necessary to the man who desires to improve himself physically by lifting weights. In fact, this was to be a major factor in Bill's decision to have just one more try and compete against these people. It thus became a quest to prove to the same-minded bodybuilders throughout the world that resorting to the dangerous practice of using drugs is not only unnecessary, it is, in Bill's opinion, sheer madness. With the decision made, Bill, with the help of Leo, began to prepare himself to do battle with the cream of the present-day bodybuilders. It was well-publicized early in 1971 that he intended entering the annual NABBA Mr. Universe contest in London. This meant that anyone who wished to compete against him, including Mr. Schwarzenegger, had ample and equal time to prepare themselves for the event. This, then, was to be Bill Pearl's effort on behalf of the sport he loved so well. He was determined to do this bit, help get the game back on an even keel where it belongs. It's possible that everyone to attain the physique they desire without the insanity of using drugs, and Bill was determined to prove it. Over the course of a year, Bill Pearl transformed himself from a great physique to the absolute greatest physique ever. There were many times that he wanted to give up, but with the ever-helpful Leo pushing and encouraging him, he persevered. In May 1971, Bill appeared as a guest poser at the AAU Mr. California contest in Los Angeles. Leo purposely had him appear just a little smoother than he normally would have been. With the Mr. Universe contest still 4 months away, Leo didn't want Bill to reach a peak twice. He received a fantastic ovation as he went through a long posing routine. This allowed some of the men who wished to compete against him in London to have a good look at him, which is exactly what Leo wanted to happen. The story started to circulate. Pearl will be a pushover. Sure, he's big, but he's too smooth. He'll never get it back again. Once that definition is gone, it's gone forever. Leo was elated. This is exactly the reaction he expected. Having convinced these people that Bill wasn't following the current trend of huge size combined with extreme definition, he and Bill's could now get to work and obtain the physique to astound everyone in London. Exercise programs and diets were carefully worked out, and from it evolved an absolutely fantastic Bill Pearl that not even his closest friends could believe. A couple weeks before the Mr. Universe event, Leo wanted to get some crowd reaction to Bill's huge yet streamlined new look. He starred, along with Boyer Coe, at a contest in Houma, Louisiana, and the fortunate people who were in attendance were simply astounded. They give Bill a roof-raising reception, and with it, the reassurance that all the hard work in the past year might just pay off in London. On Friday, September 17th, the prejudging was held to determine who would be the amateur and professional Mr. Universe winners for 1971. Great physiques journeyed from all over the world in what would be the most hotly contested Mr. Universe event ever. The great Reg Park came from Johannesburg, South Africa. Mighty Sergio Oliva flew in from Chicago, Illinois, and Frank Zane traveled all the way from Santa Monica, California. The one notable absentee was big Arnold Schwarzenegger. If anyone has any doubts as to the validity and integrity of the judging in a NABBA Mr. Universe contest, I would like you to hear Bill's own comments on the subject. This year's competition was the toughest I've ever taken part in. There's no way in the world a person can buy a contest like this. It is definitely not for sale. 13 judges from many parts of the world ensure that this is the fairest of all physique contests. Arnold Schwarzenegger himself has told me that he was always happy about being victorious in London's NABBA Mr. Universe contest, as he was never really sure that some of the other contests he has won were run on such a fair basis. As of the judging itself, it's the cruelest of its kind as for the contestant is concerned. You have to stand in a relaxed position, front, back, and side. There's no special lighting, and any flaws you may have are absolutely impossible to hide under these conditions. Remember also that each and every judge is an absolute expert who knows just what to look for. The contestants are also told as a group to do the poses that they are instructed to do. Examination, as critical as this, is hard, But let's face it, this is the only fair way to find out what a person has when compared to the other entrants. For instance, if a man has poor calves, it's pretty hard to conceal the fact when you're standing facing the judges with your knees together and the fellow on each side of you has an 18-inch calf. On the afternoon of the next day, the famous Victoria Palace was packed to the doors, as usual, for the 23rd annual Mr. Universe contest. The capacity crowd enjoyed a fabulous show with bated breath until at last the announcements were about to be made. Ladies and gentlemen, the 1971 NABBA Amateur Mr. Universe winner is Ken Waller of the United States. This was a very popular decision, and that grand old theater rang to resounding applause. You could almost hear a pin drop when the MC, Cecil Peck, went on. Ladies and gentlemen, the 1971 NABBA Professional Mr. Universe winner is Bill Pearl. That huge crowd went wild, cheering what must have been one of the most popular decisions since the contest began in 1948. A thing that may be of great interest to the readers is this. I have received many letters from friends in England who attended both the show and the prejudging, and all without exception, they told me the following. One could almost see Sergio Oliva deflating as he stood at the prejudging. Also on stage at the show, neither Bill Pearl nor Reg Park pumped up, as they knew that the amount of time a contestant has to stand being judged and on stage at this event. On Sergio, Bill said, "He has the biggest arm I've ever seen on any man, and I'm sure they must be 20¾-inch cold." And his comments on Reg Park, "It was nice to see Reg again, and I thought if his legs looked as good as I've ever seen them. Being the gentleman he is, Reg was the first person to congratulate me on my win. This, however, is typical of the man, as he is a real professional who took defeat like a true sportsman. There are some of the people in this game who don't live up to the image that's painted by them in the magazines, and I'm happy to say Reg is not one of them." After his fourth Mr. Universe victory, Bill and Leo, accompanied by their wives, took a short tour of Britain, France, and Italy, and then tired but triumphant Bill returned to California. A most pleasant surprise was yet in store for him. His club members had taken up a collection, and with the proceeds, they took Bill and his lovely wife, Judy, out to a celebration dinner and presented him with a valuable old flintlock rifle. The rifle, along with a commemorative plaque, is proudly displayed in his reception office. He told me that gesture by his friends at the Pasadena Health Club meant almost as much to him as winning the Mr. Universe crown. What of the future? Bill would like to stay in the best shape he's able and give a few exhibitions throughout the United States. He laughed as he told me he hopes to be able to enter and win a Mr. Over 50 contest in 9 years' time. I asked him why he should find it so funny, and his reply was this. "Well, George, when I won the Professional Mr. Universe contest in 1961, I was 30 years old, and I remember hoping that I might be good enough at 40 to enter an Over 40 contest. I think I've done a little bit better than I'd hoped." One thing is certain, Bill Pearl will not be competing in any more major physique contests. He has had the limelight for over 20 years, which is longer than any other physique star. He officially retires from competition as the world's best-built man. He has, more than any other star, helped spiral the human physique to heights previously thought impossible. Bill firmly believes that the true value of a man's contribution to life lies not in the success he achieves for his own personal satisfaction, but rather in the service he's able to render to his fellow men. An admirable philosophy, I'm sure you'll agree. Bill Pearl isn't a person who demands or craves attention in spite of his enormous success. In fact, he is a rather shy, retiring person who thinks more of the other person's comfort and well-being than he does of his own. With that thought in mind, I hope all readers of Iron Man magazine will join me in wishing that Bill's future will be every way as successful as has been his past. I know he would be grateful beyond words if all connected with the weight game would say with me, in recognition of his many accomplishments in the sport and being the great man that he is, thank you, Bill Pearl. All right, the end. And ties in with the interview we did, because Richard and Boyer both mentioned that posing exhibition that Bill did, and I think it was Yuma, Louisiana, and that was right before the NABBA Mr. Universe contest. It's interesting also that he talks about being drug-free. I think we all know that Bill was probably not drug-free, and he was using steroids. But Jerry Branham told me a story that he asked Bill about why he said he never took steroids, And he asked Bill in the privacy of his office, and Bill told him that the reason he said that was that he was trying to inspire young people who were coming up, and he didn't want to encourage younger people to take steroids. Bill thought that if people who admired him heard that he took steroids, that they would take them themselves. And I know Bill was really worried about what the drugs were doing to the sport, because when I had Bill out to my contest in 2011 in Chicago, and I gave him that award, he was talking about, and even before that, he was talking in the magazines about how the drug thing had just gotten way out of hand. And he predicted that these bodybuilders were going to start dying. And he did this probably 20 years ago, maybe even 30 years ago. And that's exactly what's happening today. He said it's going to come to the point where a bodybuilder is actually going to die on stage. And he thinks that's would finally stop this drug madness. But people are dying like crazy and they're still not stopping. So anyways, Bill Pearl definitely represented a better part of bodybuilding. And he was a great man and a real gentleman. And I liked in the article where it said he always tried to make people feel comfortable or feel good. That's exactly how he was. That's exactly what he did. And he was really a good person. And I think about Bill all the time when I think about how I should act in public with other people. And I'm sure other bodybuilders who have been inspired by Bill, we all think the same thing, because that's the kind of impact he left on us, just was with his conduct and the way he treated people and the gentleman that he was. And I remember doing an interview with Chris Dickerson. And when I asked Chris what he thought about Arnold, when Chris first met Arnold at the NAVA Mr. Universe in 1970, and he said, well, I had already met Bill, and Bill to me was like a real man. He was a real gentleman. And he said, Arnold was kind of like a grown-up kid. So he said that's how he could tell the difference between Bill Pearl and Arnold, not to put down Arnold, of course. But I think Bill, like I said, just his character and the way he was really made him stand out in this sport. And he will always be remembered. And like Boyer said in our interview, he even decided when he was going to die. You know, he made that decision. The infection from the hospital couldn't get to him. Parkinson's didn't get to him. Even those, that accident on the lawnmower where he broke his back and he broke his neck, or he had aberration on his back and neck. Even that didn't put him out. So Bill Pearl was a hell of a man, 91 years old, and he lived a full life. And we'll always remember him. And I'm sure we'll always be talking about him on this podcast as we continue forward. All right, guys, that's all I got for this week. Have a great week. Enjoy yourself. If you're in the hurricane zone like I am, be safe. Keep training hard. And we will talk to you guys next week. Take care.